Mega Force.
In the 80s, the good guys still win.
Oh! Ouch. Oh, good callback. All right. Welcome to the Really Shitty Movie Podcast. I am your host, Jeremy, and my co-hosts for the evening are...
Bree, hi.
His lovely wife, Declan.
No, Bree is my lovely wife. My brother, Declan.
A bit of wordplay.
And Mike.
Yeah, sitting about 20 miles away is Mike. We all got together.
20? Your grasp of distance is confusing.
You know what? Save it for the podcast.
Like 40. this is the podcast. Like 40 miles away.
We decided to get together. I have always enjoyed watching really, really bad movies and commentating on them with friends. And I figured, hey, you know what? It gets us together. We watch a movie. We have a good time bullshitting about it. And then, you know, maybe other people have fun listening to that. And it leads them to watching some really, really shitty movies.
It's like you're part of our family.
Yeah.
So who wants to tell us? Ree, why don't you tell us what we watched this week?
We watched Megaforce, which was a prime and beautiful example of 1982 cinematography.
Oh, yeah. That was in Nitro Vision.
Which I'm looking up right now because I didn't do that on my work day.
Mike, why don't you give us a brief synopsis of what Megaforce was all about?
I mean, if you don't mind, Jeremy, I'd also like to just briefly go over like what was going on in that time period when the movie was released, because I feel like a lot of people watch these old movies and they're like, oh, my God. This was the worst movie ever, but then when you think about what was going on in that time period, it kind of shed some light on what was actually going on when the movie was created.
Okay, give it to me in like 40 seconds or less.
Cool. So Star Wars was released 5 years before this movie came out.
Right, which we will never review on this podcast.
Well, definitely not, because it was a good movie. There was a war, actually, right as this movie was being produced and released.
That was War of the Worlds, correct?
Great Britain defeats Argentina in a war over some islands, which, interestingly enough, this movie has a character in it from Great Britain, and specifically...
Are we talking about Discount Michael Caine?
We are talking about Discount Michael Caine.
Yes, we are.
Okay. British Batman.
British Batman.
Yeah. And absolutely. So, yeah, so the Brits are in this movie, as are the quote-unquote Americans. We'll call them Megaforce, because that's what they call themselves.
Oh, but I have to correct you there. Megaforce is actually a conglomerate of mercenaries from different armies all around the world.
Frenchman, Japanese guy.
It's true. But here's the thing. The main character is obviously fake Chuck Norris with a perm.
Right.
So,
Perm Norris.
And he's obviously from the U.S., and then his second-hand man is from Texas.
True. So. And the scientists are all American scientists as well.
For the record, perms and feathered hair are two very different things.
Oh, she's got you there, Mike. This is why we have a woman on this podcast. there was a war, the Falklands.
Yeah. Yep. And also there were several hostage crises and assassination attempts that led up to this movie, including Ronald Reagan Reagan and the Pope at the time, John Paul II, was shot and wounded.
Is that when they started instituting the bulletproof Pope Mobile?
Right. And then, of course, MTV launched right as this movie was released as well. So there was a lot of stuff happening that was controversial. Last thing I guess I would throw out there is the Equal Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution failed to gain ratification. So feminists obviously being frustrated that they don't get their equal rights.
We still don't.
This gem of a movie comes out.
Yes, this gem of a movie. So,
That was longer than 30 seconds.
That was 40 seconds, but we gave him.
We had conversation in between.
So. Mike took about a minute there. So, Declan, why don't you give us just a short, brief synopsis of what this movie was about?
I mean, It was classic 80s misogyny bundled up into an action-packed film with B-grade graphics compared to today's CGI capabilities, and featured a lot of plot holes and continuity errors. And Patty actually asked me to say that there was a part at the very end where she actually had noticed from in and out of her sleeping.
Let me stop you for just a second. Obviously, we're reviewing older movies, so if you're worried about spoilers, you're a dumbass. and everything that we say in any one of these episodes is going to be a spoiler for these really shitty movies. Please continue. Your girlfriend Patty had said something.
Right. When the main character took a dive off the motorcycle. The dude was quite obviously black, and there were like dreadlocks that came out of the helmet, and I didn't notice this. But I mean, like, of all types of stunt doubles, like, you couldn't at least match skin color. I mean, it was shot. So then I was gonna say before we had mentioned it, it was shot in nitrovision. Mm-hmm. It specifies that really clearly at the beginning of the film, and I cannot find anything about nitrovision anywhere. The closest thing I found was a learning tool for kids, but there's no, like, camera or anything. There's no documented online so far.
The title font that they used for that was a little misleading. It could have said nitrovision. It could have said introvision or intravision. I would have to watch it a third time to try and pin it down. But once again, we still haven't gotten to the core of this movie. So,
I gave my brief synopsis already.
Okay. So,
it's not the true plot. I mean, the true plot of the movie is, you know, a secret agent that works for All-Man, aka Megaforce.
Introvision. Sorry.
That has like this secret lair in the middle of the desert, and so the main character is basically, trying to, or he leads like 60 men. They all ride motorcycles.
And hell yeah, they do.
I mean, I call them dirt bikes, but
whatever. Yeah. So basically, there's a war or this like complications going on with, I'm assuming Mexico is what it is.
It's I believe it's some country in South America.
Yeah,
I heard them say Yemen at one point, and I wrote that down. They said something about the Yemen campaign.
I don't think that was what it was, though. No, it's like...
Yeah.
So as you can tell, with just the small amount of discommunication we're having right now, it was a very confusing plot. It had a very, very simple underline to it, but everything that they tried to pour onto that as to exposition was very convoluted and muddy.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, we start where we should start at the beginning. We're introduced to our bad guy or bad guys with a general in the bad guy army giving a speech in front of people that they've taken out of this plant before they blow it up in really broken English, to the point where he's actually even saying comma and stop when he's addressing these people. The main bad guy,
I think he was reading from like a telegraph.
But, yeah.
I mean, again, to each their own.
Yeah. It's like either a book that he's holding up or,
yeah, and the main bad guy is sort of looking around with this really bored look on his face, and immediately at that point I wrote down, this guy's face equals me at this movie.
Yeah, that scene was pretty ridiculous. Also, what led up to that scene, the introduction to the movie, where they had a whole bunch of negatives.
Oh.
Basically, they had negatives of all the most expensive shots in the movie. So, like, if you were wondering what was going to happen in the movie,
just watch the
intro.
Yep.
Yeah. And then once the movie starts, now you've seen all the action that you're going to see in the movie in negative.
Yeah, realistically, we only needed to watch the first minute and a half of the movie to know everything we needed to know.
I would disagree, but we'll get into that when we get a little further in.
Also, I would also like to point out that how I was rating how terrible this movie was is how many times I felt the need to pick up my cell phone instead of watching this movie.
What was that rating?
Which,
about 8 times.
Yeah, which is actually pretty good for her. I'm not going to lie.
I was trying hard to not.
Okay, so like when he finishes his little speech, he gets like dragged away, right? and they open up. All these tanks are lined up. They open up on this facility, and then it shoots to the scene where explosions happen. And, you know, for this day and era, there's no special effects. There's no CGI, obviously. So they make little miniatures. And yeah. Usually these miniatures, like, they're pretty expensive. It takes a long time to make.
Oh, it was definitely a miniature.
It was made out of
It looked like it was made out of styrofoam, legitimately.
And after they blow it up, we immediately cut to the next day as they're traveling in their tanks down a dirt road where Discount Michael Caine has his own troops ready to fire on them. But just before they
explain to the audience, like what this dude looks like, because some people won't get that reference.
Okay, he's very British. If you've seen Batman: The Dark Knight, he's Alfred. He's Alfred in a British military outfit. That's pretty much what he is.
And an ascot.
And an ascot. There were ascots all over this movie. It was ridiculous.
I think we're also forgetting the whole. Whole girl who's superfluous.
We haven't gotten that far yet. So right before anything happens with these tanks, the second in command to the bad guy, who I have noted as Fidel Castro, is yelling at the main bad guy, saying, "You have to let me finish my speech, because if I don't talk, nobody understands." And I'm sitting there like, "Buddy, I heard you talk, and I don't understand what you're saying."
And are you only using Fidel Castro because he's dead?
No, because he's Fidel Castro. And then we get to meet our one and only female in this movie. Am I correct in remembering? Well, I guess there was one or two females mixed in the plant workers in the very first scene.
Yeah,
because there was literally probably one or two plant workers.
Well, yeah.
I wrote that down. There was like one guy in this huge room working one console.
It's like you couldn't have spared.
It was late at night. I mean.
That's true.
It was a
night shift.
But so we get to meet our one and only female lead, and you know, being the only female in this episode of the podcast, Rhee, what did you think of the female lead in this movie?
I mean, it was just it's not like the actress's fault or anything, you know. It's just obviously this was a movie that was written by men for men, and it was very clear from the very beginning. As soon as she met the Discount Chuck Norris for the Megaforce, that it was going to be a love interest.
Ace
there was like,
Hunter.
Yeah, Ace Hunter. So there was no choice.
And the whole thing that happens here is that we find out that Discount Michael Caine is trying to take a bad guy whose name's Guerrera, and he can't cross the border into the country that Guerrera is hiding out in, basically.
Gambia, by the way. They're both fictional countries.
Gambia is the name of it?
Yeah.
So Gambia. So Discount Michael Caine and female lead, who I have written down as Carmen Sandiego, they get together to go and find this mercenary group that'll help them help them deal with their Guerrera problem.
This is a point I actually wanted to make,
yeah.
And this is a perfect time to segue into it. Remember when I was talking about the Falkland Wars just a moment ago?
Right.
The Guerrera de las Malvinas was actually part of the Falkland conflict. So it's interesting that they reference the name Guerrera in the movie.
Mm.
It may have no meaning whatsoever, but it's just interesting they use that exact same name.
Yep, I'm betting that somebody thought they were really clever when they did that.
Yeah. Super clever.
So they get to the middle of the desert. Their limo driver is a complete dick, which I thought was kind of funny. Also, both the limo driver and the person who picks them up in a minute, both minorities. So they're only driven around by minorities, which I thought was very amazing. And, Carmen Sandiego, middle of the desert, going to meet a bunch of mercenaries. Very flowy red dress and wearing heels in the middle of the desert.
I mean, wouldn't you?
And then checking in on her makeup while she's waiting there. I mean, it's very... Very interesting character choices there.
And also, like, when we first meet her, they give her two close-ups for head shaking.
Yep.
Just to make sure that you get a full look at her.
I give them points for her being a minority woman. That was kind of impressive.
There you go.
She totally wasn't bad to look at.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about her was is that she was a soldier, She was a major, and she was the president's daughter.
And she stood up for herself.
So she was a... I mean, progressively, she was a good character, but she didn't have much of a place in this movie besides being the love interest. So they're hanging out in the desert, and then we get to meet our first member of the Megaforce team, Dallas. And
oh, God.
He looks like Charlie from the Chocolate Factory.
That's what this is, right? Yeah. That's what this note was. Two shots for one snake.
Yeah. Supreme Elite Fighting Squad, and he has to take two shots to kill a rattler. And
instead of saying, hey, there's a snake about to bite you, because, you know, we could talk to each other, and it would be like, ah!
I didn't look up the actor or anything, but it seemed pretty clear that this guy definitely didn't have a natural Texan accent. And he was doing a Texan accent based on what he thinks a Texan accent is.
Yeah, but like an offensive Texas accent.
Like he's trying to offend people from Texas.
Yeah.
He's wearing a skull shirt and a cowboy hat.
Oh, he's
like, what?
Like overdoing it. Like you can just smell the chew on him.
Smell the chew.
And then
one might say he's bloody barbaric.
Yep. One did say he was bloody barbaric. So then the aforementioned minority driver shows up, and it's a black guy. I immediately was like, I'm going to be really sad if this black guy is only here for this scene and not in the rest of the movie. Luckily, he was actually part of the Megaforce, but I felt that that's where this was headed.
And then you've got the holo projector.
Oh, man. Which, yeah. I was also 100% sure that that wasn't going to be making another appearance later on in the movie.
Yeah, it made an extra appearance.
Well, and I'll get.
It didn't need to.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that.
So there was two women in this movie. Well, was just a
that's true.
brief note on the lead woman. She was best known for her role as Lieutenant Ilya on the 79 film Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
Oh wow!
Didn't even know that she was in that. She is no longer with us, though.
So I mean, at this point,
Indian, but she played a South American woman.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Just because she's brown?
Yep, makes sense. I mean, it's Hollywood. So one of the things that I noticed when I was watching this movie and I got to this point, as we've all probably taken notes, I'm just, like, looking through them and I see, like, at this point in the movie, there's all these pop culture references, like, in the puns and when they're talking to each other. And like, I'm thinking, maybe this is a stoner movie for back in the day, or is this a movie for kids that are thinking about joining the military? Like, I have no clue what's going on here.
Who was it? Somebody said that there were toys that were made out of this movie, right? Like, they had a toy line.
Toys. Oh, yeah, man. They have a full toy line, man.
Wait, how well did this do when it came out?
We'll get to that. We're doing a test at the end of this.
Oh, okay.
Dallas is actually from Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
No wonder it sounded like it had a bit of a
drawl.
Yeah, sting to it when it came out of his mouth.
Before we get to the first meat and veg of this movie, we are in the car with Black Driver, and I will say that it was very apparent that Discount Michael Caine did not like that Black Driver was intelligent. He out-Shakespeared him, he out-classical musiced him, and at every turn, DMC had this scowl on his face, just like, oh, you rascally little rascal, you.
Yeah.
But then, dear God, we meet the Megaforce.
We meet them.
Those skin tight, tan spandex suits,
jumpsuits.
So, yeah, riding dirt bikes
in the desert.
Yeah, and then I changed my thought. Like, okay, I'm not gonna rate this movie on how many times I want to check my cell phone. I'm gonna rate this movie on how many dick prints I see.
what's
your new rating?
Too high. So it was probably somewhere like 12.
I was thinking like 72.
Nice. Yeah, I thought.
Well, no, but I wanted to give it a fair shot, and I wanted like a full second and a half of like crotch.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
You got more than that with Ace Hunter.
Yeah. There was a lot of stancing.
Plenty of booty shots too, though.
Yeah, he had wedgies throughout the entire.
Yeah, yeah, his sure. His wide walk made me think that he probably was chafing in that lycra.
And we're introduced to them by three of the Megaforce's main people riding their patented motorcycles with bottle rocket launchers and machine guns firing on giant tennis balls and basketballs.
Yes.
And
fruit, I think.
And fruit.
They were apparently filled with, like, powder and
explosives.
Shit.
Like, yeah,
also with, like, balloons and stuff.
But the wheelies were pretty impressive, I gotta say that. The fact that they were wheeling to use their machine guns in the air was pretty cool. And then they stop to get off their motorcycles and meet them, and immediately our main guy, Ace Hunter, whatever his name is, gets off his motorcycle, sees Carmen Sandiego, and immediately unzips the front of his jumpsuit to let a little chest show. Yeah. It's like,
or maybe
oh,
lets a mare in, because you know it is the
right
desert.
Here's a woman, let's immediately objectify her. And one of the guys, like, was he sees Ace looking at Carmen Sandiego, and he says, "Target acquired." And then Ace makes some ridiculous quip about knowing somebody at Disneyland, and on that line the same guy goes, "Target destroyed."
Oh my god,
I was like, what is happening?
It was definitely our version of, like, that was a good burn.
Yeah,
like, you've been burned, put some ice on that bitch.
I have so many notes in here about their jumpsuits, like, I just couldn't take
well
my
I mean
eyes
every
off them.
Scene they were in a different color jumpsuit.
Yeah.
That's what I was confused about. Like, they started off in a white one, then they were in gold, and then they were in their black suits.
But see, that's the glory of a jumpsuit.
It's really, yeah.
You can just jump into a new one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really important in a very large, high-budget movie to have a good wardrobe. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, they wanted to make sure they had all the hot keys and, like, the power colors on their main characters.
But it wasn't
which they totally pulled off.
It wasn't even a good war. It was the same jumpsuit in a different color.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking
and it had a foldable flap where no one had their pips except for her.
True.
So, you know, kudos to her for having some pips.
So
that's because they were disavowed. That was part of the joining Megaforce. Sorry.
Go ahead. Okay. No, after we have this little meet cute in the desert, they bring them to the Megaforce compound, and we get to meet the the eggheads that run the joint, and we're about 21 minutes in when we finally get the explanation that the Megaforce is a phantom army donated by leaders of the world, and the leaders are the ones who decide how they're used. And I immediately wrote down, yeah, I'm sure that won't come back in any ironic way, right? And another note here about the suit and the ascot head desk.
Am I missing something? Is there a number two?
No.
We have some answers.
I don't think
there's a Megaforce 2. No.
I definitely feel like they left it open at the end for a sequel, but after how bad it bombed, I doubt that it was even on the
epic
idea.
Levels of fail.
Yeah.
And then we get another meet cute between Carmen Sandiego and Perm Norris, Feathered Norris.
Thank you.
And and there's this line where he's checking out her pips on her
uniform.
Thank you. And he's like making jokes about how she doesn't have the good conduct merit badge, and
no, she does have the good.
No, he says that was the only one she was missing, and he's like, you can tell a lot about a soldier by what merits they have, and she says, well, I'm at a you have me at a disadvantage because you're not wearing yours, and he says, well, I didn't say you could tell everything about a man by his chest, and she looks at him and she says, or hers.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh god, they're flirting, right?
Then
this is flirting.
He promptly just like stared at her boobs and then was like, okay, let's go to dinner.
Oh god. And they had the little hand moment on the door sensor.
Oh man. Yeah, they both like touch hands and it's very obvious that her hands already hit the button to open the door, and then his hand like goes over top of hers, like, yeah. Oh yeah, I totally didn't do that on purpose. Yeah.
We made this
moment. I wasn't forcing this moment at all.
Yeah, so forced.
I don't wait for chances. I take them.
And we got some more exposition where we find out that Feathered Norris knows Guerrera, that they used to serve with each other, and he tells this little story about how he came this close to bringing him back to our side. And Discount Michael Caine looks at him and says, well, what happened? And he just completely straight-faced with no humor in the line whatsoever, he says, he stole my lighter. Like,
he was just, this whole, like, he, like, is so angry over a fucking Zippo.
So then we find out their whole plan is a sort of a bait and hook operation where they, Megaforce is going to run in, blow up one of Guerrero's compounds, and then trail him back over the border so that Discount Michael Caine's forces can take him down. And then we get the whole sequence where Carmen Sandiego has to prove herself worthy enough to be in the man's army.
Yep.
Megaforce, which is, you know, created by the fucking world leaders, and she wants to just jump in because she's the president's daughter.
And then we immediately...
Are you sounding kind of sexist over there, Declan?
I mean, I'm just stating the facts.
I mean, but I want to know why we're in an airplane all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, that's like... the thing, is the first thing that they do is they're, boom, and they're in an airplane, and they do a skydiving scene. Yeah. And like, I immediately, because I had watched this once before, and as soon as this started, they both sort of sighed, and I said, oh, get ready, because this scene is 2 minutes long, and it's literally 2 minutes.
It's so pointless.
It's pointless. I do have to say, though, not the worst flying through the air scene. I think Superman still has that beat down with Lois Lane's, like, talk poem song that she does in the original Superman, but this is a close second. It's literally just them floating through the air for 2 minutes.
And, like, holding hands occasionally, and then, like they're doing aerobatics. And
like,
it's just
like poorly, poorly done aerobatics.
And that's just, like, not the way you would skydive if you're going into, like, a battle zone.
Can I...
And then also, like, the backdrop of the really sweet music that doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I also make the point that he pulled his cord prematurely?
Yeah.
he totally got off before she did.
Yep, he did.
And he's like, hey, I'll help you. And then
practically pushed her away and then opened his cord.
He's like, oh, no!
And then they land, they get in the chopper, and she's just like, oh, can I fly this chopper? And they're like, sure, go ahead. And then they start flying away, and then we hear her voice over the comm, but she never put on a headset. So how is she speaking to them at that point?
Yeah. And how are you just going to be like, yeah, sure, you totally know how to fly a helicopter, right? This is not going to be a risk to our lives at all. And this is not going to go bad at all. No thanks.
And then we get to part two of her her proving herself montage, which is her in like a simulated motorcycle doing a test run where she gets a perfect score. And he immediately apologizes to her, but not for being misogynist and a dickhole. He apologizes for letting it go on so long because he never planned to take her with her anyway. So there was no point to these exercises at all.
Wasted film footage. And I also want to point out that in that scene, there was a lot of sexual tension, like, and it was built specifically to have sexual tension. And he could have totally done like when a man loves a woman line. Like there could have been actually remote romanticism in that scene, and it just epic fell on its face because he was like, oh no, yeah, I was just being a dick.
I was gonna make a point on the motorcycle simulation thing. She's like, a perfect score, and I kind of turned. I was like, whenever I play video games and the screen flashes red, that's usually when you're losing life. You know what I mean? Like, how did you get a perfect score? You literally just had like 9 red errors mark your screen as you went through that, and you got like dangerously close to each of those semis. So I don't, like, personally as a motorcyclist, I don't think you did really good.
And I have to point out, she's wearing a skin tight black latex, or not latex, a spandex suit with a bomb handkerchief. Yeah. Like, again, we got neckerchiefs galore and jumpsuits galore in this movie. Yeah, he basically says, you did awesome, better than anyone, but you still can't come. Yeah. And then she literally tells him that he's a great leader. And it's like, you've known this guy for a day? And how exactly you determine that he's a great leader?
By the way, he led you on and thinking that you could come on this trip with him.
Yep.
Yeah.
not.
Totally gonna bang it when he comes back.
And then
so
sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So I was just gonna point out that like the scene following that scene, there's a whole bunch of dudes that are wearing like skin tight outfits, and it's all like crotch shots, just like
you
were saying
print,
earlier.
Dick print.
And one of the things that I noticed was that in like the first couple of scenes, you see the main character. And like the first scene you see him in, when they show up, they get off the motorcycle, he's totally got a fucking chub, like a full on hard on. And
a
then
chub
this
or a
scene,
full on hard on,
yeah, because those
well,
are two different
well,
things.
Like,
like a full on chubby, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like okay. he's close to full hard on, like
he's like three quarters stock
way there, but yeah. But yeah. So and those
so what you're
are
saying
all
is it would be sad if he was all the way there.
Maybe, yeah. It probably would be sad if that was it. So he, none of the scenes where he's actually got a chub is the chick in front of him.
Yeah, it's all about the
just interesting
of the motor.
I watched it twice, so I just to confirm. But yeah,
the movie or yeah. that scene?
He watched the movie twice.
I watched the movie.
He watched the movie on almost a third time today. And then right after that, we cut to the Megaforce getting ready to take off on their expedition. And then we have the two of them kiss. And I had it right down. They just kissed. I have no reason whatsoever to care about the love interest in this movie right now.
Yeah.
Like, I have no reason to understand why these two are in this meet cute love relationship. It doesn't make any sense. If this movie were to be remade, and I think it actually could be remade in a decent way, if it were to be remade, I would love to have her not have any love interest, and I would love to have at least a couple of viable side characters in the Megaforce army be female as well.
And a lot more ballroom.
And a lot more testicle
and
room,
other,
yes.
Other, skin type.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a pretty decent. I mean, at least in the
pretty,
core group,
yeah.
there was you know, there was a Hispanic guy, there was black guy, there was.
I'm saying with the women that you want in there. They
oh, the women,
be
yeah, for sure.
You know.
So then they're on the plane, and there's only a couple of notes I have for them on the plane. One is there's a part where one guy's throwing a knife into the wall of the metal wall of the plane. And not only is he throwing a knife into a metal wall in a plane, but when he throws it, it's making a missile sound.
Sound
editing was terrible in this movie.
There was a lot of random, like...
Dude, they're high-tech soldiers.
Yeah.
He's throwing that shit really fast.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, what I heard was, like, cartoon sounds.
It was very cartoony. And then, of course, we get yet another... point where we have to show that the black guy is the most intelligent guy there by him completing a Rubik's Cube, because that was like the epitome of being intelligent in the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. And also, basically, like, the Europeans are calling the Americans strange, and Europeans can't solve Rubik's Cubes. That's what I got from that scene.
Well, the guy who was trying to solve the Rubik's Cube was a Japanese man.
Yeah.
Which was kind of funny to me, because I thought that was going to be the stereotype, but it wasn't.
Yeah. And yeah, kept another note about the cat suits. Make me feel like we're about to walk a runway, not land in one. another note here: pacing and editing. These are things I put down. And 44 minutes in, I would like to say that when it was about 40 minutes into this movie, I had already had a page and a half of notes. This movie was just ridiculous. Then we get to see Guerrera again, and we know that he's a bad guy because he cheats at chess. So, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, clearly a 12-year-old wrote this movie. Like, oh, my God, you cheat at chess. You're the worst guy ever.
Right. And
I mean, you win.
Well.
And then we get the engine check before they parachute down in all their vehicles. And that engine check is another 2 minutes of superfluous footage. Somebody was just really proud of those motorcycle designs. And then, oh my God, action movie gold, we get a fucking ticking clock on the screen.
Before that happens, I want to go back to all the stuff landing and then motorcycles and vehicles driving out.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
they did really terrible job at cutting the footage to make it look like more vehicles were coming out of that than there was actually room for.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, there were like three planes, and, but
yeah, it was literally
like 60 vehicles.
It was the same exact video footage over and over again.
Yeah, they reused a lot of footage in this.
Yeah.
A lot of footage.
Well, I mean, it was like they were all set up the same way because they're all so intelligent and intertwined with each other that everybody drops out at the exact same time. So they're like, hey, you know, why not? They're all already, you know, sequenced in there. They know the best route to getting out. It's not like they were all jib-jabbed in there and misplaced, you know.
So there are a couple of points that I need to make about this this Carnage attack scene that we have next when they attack Guerrera's compound. Number one, we get Microsoft Paint lasers. That was pretty cool.
Radical dude.
And there's a part where the Guerrera is bringing in his tanks, and one of the motorcycles heads to take on the tank, and the bottle rockets clearly miss the tank by about 7 feet and fly up and off the screen, and the tank explodes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the bottle rockets were just there to deposit the C4 charges, obviously.
Oh, okay, yeah. With the micro micro nanites.
Yeah, they were totally high-tech
yes.
weapons, because, yeah. you know, they had that kind of stuff.
And then I uncovered a major plot hole here, guys.
Big surprise.
The four-wheel vehicles that they have can be remotely controlled. Why are there people in them at all? Why don't they have more of those satellite vehicles that sit up, you know, 500 yards away from the battle and just are remotely controlling the things that are shooting lasers at people?
Because you have to have somebody inside so that when you're ready to blow it up, they can jump out and run around like a fool and get somebody else to pick them up instead of, you know, shooting stuff.
Right.
But. Well, there is that, but there's also that you can't replace the element of a pilot. That's what the whole U.S. military has said this. Whenever, like, drone warfare is mentioned, they're always like, well, the element of a pilot is always going to be different than sitting a chair 100, you know, million miles away from the conflict. Like they've always said, pilots are better at dealing with situations than someone sitting behind a console. Because their life isn't at risk. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just figure they have the remote technology. They have from what we are meant to believe, a completely lifelike simulation technology. They should be able to marry the two together.
And lasers.
But I don't want to spend 20 minutes on this thing.
They also razed that entire village to the ground.
Oh, entire. And the fires were very deliberate.
In 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's an impressive 3-minute blaze.
The last thing I want to say about this is at the very end, the remote vehicle, we see three of the bad guys crawling up to it with an RPG. And lead scientist inside of the vehicle uses some kind of weapon to attack them. Which somehow either fries or explodes the projectile inside the RPG and kills them? We don't know.
They just disappear.
They disappear, yeah.
They just disappear, and there's smoke coming off the gun.
I just assume it's like a superheated gamma ray.
I thought it was like a microwave burst that vaporized them and then fried the systems inside the
But don't you feel? Don't you feel like if you're going to make a movie and you're going to be like, I'm just going to vaporize a couple of dudes... You should at least show some
boots on the ground.
Yeah, something. I need something.
Especially when it's that cheesy.
Yeah, and then you pan to nothing. Like, I want to see somebody get vaporized, even if it is really bad.
So speaking of cheesy, I mean, there was a lot of like. I honestly was pretty bored up until this point, just because it was pretty cut and dry of what was happening. Then they get to the refill point, and
actually, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
You, before we get to the refill, so when the you cut to a scene where the main villain, the bad guy, the whole time he's had kind of a Hispanic sort of South American kind of draw to his speech. And all of a sudden, like, he's yelling at his troops, and he has a New York accent all of a sudden.
Oh, not only that, but he, like, yells at somebody on the phone saying, doesn't anybody there not speak Spanish? Like, You have a Spanish name. We've already established earlier when they were talking about his profile that his parents both also had Spanish names. Now, that's not to say everybody with a Spanish name technically knows Spanish, but it's like you not only come from a Spanish heritage, but you've been ingrained in a Spanish culture for who knows how long. Like, why the hell don't you speak like fluent Spanish, especially if that's what, you know, all of your troops speak?
Yeah. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Get going. Like, what? That's not how you sounded the rest of the movie.
So we get to the refill points, and that's when sort of my curiosity peaked up for a second, because all of a sudden, bad guy flies in a medevac chopper, and they all start acting really buddy-buddy, and I was like, this is a really weird, like,
yeah,
atmosphere.
Dynamic.
Yeah, the dynamic that's happening right now. And then all of a sudden, Discount Michael Caine and Carmen Sandiego fly in on his private helicopter and basically tell them that, oh, this is going to be considered an act of war. We have to cancel the mission. It's like, didn't you already know that that was a possibility? Like, why is everybody acting like this is a big surprise right now?
Hey, you just blew up somebody's shit.
And I don't remember, but I think you missed a scientist scene in between that cut shot, because the scientist says Yahoo and breaks his glasses.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. That and it's just cheesy. Like, I swear to God, the 12-year-old either directed or wrote the script for this movie. Like, I don't.
Yeah. And then we also get finally the hologram. No, I'm sorry, not holograms, because they're not holograms in this movie.
They're projections.
They're holographs. Mm-hmm. They're called holographs. And out of everything that they could have used this hologram technology for, when Guerrero's number two, what did I call him? Fidel Castro is spying on them from the ridge. Good old Dallas puts on the same exact holograph projection of the woman in the ocean scene. It's like, you could have made it look like you had like 20 tanks waiting for them, or a 10 megaton nuclear weapon sitting,
or a naked woman,
right?
Yeah, I mean, she was still like basically clothed,
or like pack at like you could have had like a group of hungry alpha megaforce wolves, you know, anything. But no, you put on this ridiculous distraction that doesn't even act as a distraction, and it's literally another 2 minutes that didn't have to be in the film at all. It didn't make any sense.
But it did distract the spy. He stopped communicating with his boss
for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So then we find out that that their megaforce is being abandoned by the troops that sent them there, and that either they can try and cross the border, which will start a war, or they can try and leave the valley through a dry lake bed, but that Guerrero already has all of his tanks there ready to just plow them down.
So can we also talk about the scene where Dallas stops and then the supposed Native American guy asks if they scalped anybody?
Oh man. Oh, that was horrid. That was horrid.
But hey, it's not racist, because a person playing a Native American was the one who made the joke.
Yeah.
So
white logic right there for you.
if it was ad-libbed. Who's to say that it wasn't ad-libbed? You don't know.
Are you trying to defend this comment?
I'm just playing the devil's advocate.
So then they decide that what they're going to try and do is to
internet trolls
sneak behind.
Sneak up behind the tanks and take them from behind while they're being distracted by the cargo planes flying in. Which reinforces the idea that Guerrero's men are the worst shots. They have, what, like 15 tanks, and they hit one of the cargo planes once when they're flying 50 feet above the ground. Like,
well, I mean, tanks aren't meant to shoot at aircraft, so there's that. Like, brilliant strategy. Let's shoot at airplanes with tanks. But also, let's talk about the classic thumb kiss move.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe we missed that. Yeah.
And you know what? I think it should be a thing. I think we should bring it back.
Well, he wants to.
There is some kind of cultural thing. Patty was telling us that, which is Declan's girlfriend, was telling us that there is some old cultural thing about the moon, and it's like kiss.
I'm only a moon away.
Yeah, I'm only a moon away, where you kiss your finger and put it up to the moon, which I wouldn't have understood unless I had looked it up myself. But yeah, it was very out of place, and it was very hokey, and.
She aggressively waved too. Yeah, there's a lot of aggressive waving.
Yeah.
True. And also there's a brilliant scene where Guerrera and Discount Chuck Norris with Feathered Norris.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Feathered Norris. He's outside of the helicopter talking to Guerrera, and he makes this quip, Guerrera does, in the 70s you can be an idealist, but in the 80s it's too expensive.
Yeah.
Like,
Which was actually a pretty good line. I'm gonna say, you know,
it's not bad. I mean, if there was some background behind it, like, oh, you know, in the 70s, you know, we were deployed together at so and so location at such and such war, but there's no backstory, so it's just kind of okay.
Well, I think it was more of a cultural line, though. It was more of a pop cultural line, like, you know, in the 70s we're all free thinkers. You know, we didn't really care about monies, and then the 80s happened, where it was literally the suits took over in the 80s. I think it was a very a loaded line. That's why I thought it was pretty good. But
it was all right.
Yeah,
but
again, comparatively to the rest of the movie, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Guerrera had some really good lines in the movie, but his delivery was so bizarre and goofy and wacky.
Yeah, his accent kept changing. Yeah.
And his facial expressions were real strange.
Yeah, he kind of looked like Will Wheaton with grease in his beard, oil in his beard, and a little Hispanic blood in him.
Totally, you know, see it now.
You see that?
Yeah. I was trying to find a celebrity that could match him. So, yeah. Totally.
So we're getting close to the end here. One of the cargo planes does get hit. So the load that they can carry is cut in half. So they find out they have to leave all of their
beloved dirt bikes
behind and set them to auto-destruct.
Bottle rockets are cool and so are explosions. But I guess that's the whole movie, right?
Yeah, and I will say that one of the cooler parts of this movie was in order to get to the planes and to allow the plane to land, all of the motorcycles had colored smoke that they let off, and they created a smoke screen in this, like, rainbow pattern, which was really cool visually.
Since they were all driving in a line.
Yeah, it was very, very cool in that regard. Yeah.
Cinematography on that was awesome. That and the slow-mo of Discount Chuck Norris throwing a grenade while he's in the air on the motorcycle. Yep.
Yeah, which acted like a thermite charge. That was pretty awesome.
it was awesome, yeah.
Discount Chuck Norris goes down. He goes down in the middle of the smoke. Yeah, everybody else makes it to the plane, and they're not sure if he's going to make it back. And he sticks around to give another quip to Guerrera. Not shoot him in the face, you know.
Steal his lighter back.
He did steal his
lighter. The good guys always win.
Yep.
Even in the 80s.
Yep.
Like, what?
Good guys always win. And then he starts driving for the plane, but the plane's already taking off. And we think he's gonna ride the bike onto the plane, or he's gonna do a wheelie and jump on there. No, the plane takes off, and what does he do? But the thing that was alluded to way back when the scientist said 1-2, he presses two buttons, and his motorcycle turns into a fucking jet.
It starts to fly.
And it was
It doesn't even turn into a jet, though. It just has these little itty bitty wings on the back of it.
It turns
and
into
white smoke flies out of the back of it, like, and all of a sudden it's in the air.
Yeah, he it was like slightly aggressive paper airplane.
Oh my god!
It was so bad, and then of course the green screening of him acting like he's flying on it was just as bad.
Oh, and his orgasm face.
Oh, he was O-facing the entire.
I mean, but. Can you blame him?
Right, if you're flying a jet motorcycle, I would
away
kind of
from certain death.
I would orgasm too. Yeah. So he makes it out of clear death, and we cut to Discount Michael Caine giving a speech to the press about that they didn't have any knowledge about what was going on, and
they condoned the act, of course.
And at that point, the plane is flying by, and I'm thinking, oh, he's gonna jet.
I have this question though, because they said when they all the boys were getting off of their motorcycles and stuff and getting on the plane to set your things to self-destruct, but they never blew them up.
Right.
Like, you never shown them blow
up. Which I actually thought would have been a really fun ending to this movie is that he flies his jet bike into the back of the cargo plane, and then it blows up. The entire Megaforce is dead.
Whose bike was that?
So, but he's giving this press conference, and we see Feathered Norris up in his plane, and I was like, oh, he's going to fly that fucking motorcycle jet again. I'm going to have to facepalm it again. He's going to fly down, and he's going to confront him. But no, he just fires off a rocket and blows up Michael Caine's private helicopter.
Okay, sorry, Sir Michael Caine.
And then another quip of the wheel always comes around.
Yep. Like, yep. Very proudly.
That's iconic.
He was very proud of that line. And at the same time, both Carmen Sandiego and Discount Michael Caine are laughing about this private property.
I would be so mad. Fucking helicopter.
He loved that. He loved that helicopter so much. He put shag carpeting and air conditioning in it, which apparently, you know, air conditioning in a helicopter, it was very sparse in the 80s. But yeah, so I don't think that a general who had a private aircraft just destroyed in front of him for something that wasn't his fault, it was a politician issue. I don't think he'd be smiling and laughing about that. I think he would have ordered an airstrike on that cargo plane.
True. Also, when she started laughing and she smiled, the scene that they and the shot that they did for her in that scene made her not look attractive. Like, she was big teeth laughing, and it was like, what's going on?
See,
that's all that matters, is that she also has to look attractive.
Yeah, and I never have a problem with women.
I mean, if her role in the movie is to be the femme fatale / like super hot chick that the main character has a love interest in, then yeah, that's her job in the movie to be hot.
I mean, let's be honest.
And it's not her fault that she doesn't look attractive in that scene. It's the shot that they do of her.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, well, and you got to understand she's a soldier too, so maybe explosions get her off and, you know, getting out aggression gets her off. So she was like, oh my God, I really want this guy's nuts, but he's flying away, so I'm just going to laugh at him.
Yeah, but they did their thumb kiss thing again to seal their love. Yep.
Meeting
in London.
That's not how you seal
it. So,
they're going to seal their love in London.
Oh, and then we also see Guerrera laughing hysterically and super goofily.
Real quick, he's Guillermo Wheaton.
Guillermo Wheaton. I love it. It's great.
Nice.
So that's pretty much the end. Now, before we start talking about our worst parts of this movie, one thing I would like to do with this podcast, since we are reviewing movies that are going to be super terrible, and we're just going to be tearing them apart, I would like each of us to find one nice thing to say about this movie. Yeah, with no sarcasm behind it, something that you thought was pretty cool or like the best part of this movie. For me, I thought cinematically, the scene right after the simulation where they're both standing in silhouette in front of the purple screen was cinematically gorgeous. I thought it was a perfect amount of breakup between the shot to shot. It was a single shot all in silhouette. You know, if you take away the dialogue that happens in that scene, visually, it's just a beautiful scene. That's mine. Declan, did you have something nice to say about this movie?
Well, Mama always said, if you don't have something nice, don't say anything at all. And I already broke most of that. So, or, you know, essentially all of it. But, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I thought it was going to be a lot worse than it was. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't say that sarcastically, but it was a lot better than I thought it was, but it was still a kind of, you know,
wasn't great.
Yeah. It takes a certain type of taste to really like those older movies and maybe even, you know, a better knowledge of those times to understand it even more as a, not to say that as like a comical parody, but as a, you know, a political parody to what's going on.
I mean, specifically something nice that you liked about it. So did you like the music? Did you like the set design, prop design, vehicle design? I mean, like, Was there anything in it that you thought, yeah, that was pretty cool? I mean, minus all the other crap.
Well, I mean, I did say stuff interspersed throughout
right.
the things that I did like the motorcycles. I think those are pretty cool, and the fact that it could jet, you know, like that. I would have an orgasm if I was flying a jet
right.
from certain death onto
a jet motorcycle plane. That had machine guns and rockets.
Right,
and,
you know, no one would yeah. fuck with me in traffic.
And I
could go off road.
They had some weird name for the paint that it had. They could have just called it like photophobic. Paint. It was like the a negative photovoltaic is what something they called it.
Yeah.
Remember. But yeah. Anyway. What about Ree? What something nice to say about this movie?
The way that it was shot, everybody's teeth looked like metal.
Yep.
And I thought that was pretty cool. I do like the fact that there was a good amount of people of color in this movie. We even today. We see movies all the time that is like completely whitewashed. Yeah. So, I mean, that was pretty impressive. But the 80s and the 90s, I feel, was a lot more of a accepting yeah. time when it came to yeah. color. And we've kind of...
I don't really want to get into my conspiracy theories about how people of Asian descent are currently being sort of written out of our media, which I find very, very disturbing. You did have a point to make, Declan.
Yes, but then you started
metal teeth.
Get distracted. Oh, right. So, introvision, not nitrovision, as I was pointed out a little bit earlier, because I did some more research when I figured out what it was like one of the first concept cameras that allowed you to do editing on the camera.
Oh, wow.
So, like, on our old school 8mm handy cams that we had as kids, like, you could solarize shit, like... That's essentially what they were doing is they were solarizing and they were being able to equalize.
Man, some of those solarization shots were terrible, though.
Right. So, like,
true.
That was what was so cool about Introvision. Like, being able to do some of your editing in camera and see what the shot would look like before sending it to post-production.
Mike, something nice to say about this movie?
I gotta say this. When you did a barrel roll, I totally did say
barrel roll.
Do a barrel roll, and like
right before or after?
No, it was before he did it actually, because I was like, he's in the air, he might as well, and he fucking did it, and I was like, what? But
did I just do that?
There were references, like historical references in the movie. They were very brief, and they may have not been done on purpose, but I did like that about it.
Even though it's supposed to be an artificial, made-up land.
Correct. Well, I mean, any time movies come out that have war-torn landscapes in them, they're usually a political commentary about something that happened recently.
Right.
Usually.
And I'm familiar with the multiverse, so there's there's that, too.
So being that this is the first episode of this podcast, we're probably going to... in the future, relate other movies that we watched to how good or bad this movie was. But for this movie, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good was this movie? Mike, we'll start with you.
Ooh, I would give it 5 barrel rolls.
5 barrel rolls from Mike. All right. And Declan?
I'd give it 2 bongs.
2 bongs. Yeah. 2 bongs from Declan.
2 out of 10.
Ree?
I'm going to definitely give it 4 dick prints.
4 dick prints from Ree. I would give it 5 women, but since that can't happen in this movie, I'm gonna have to give it 2 kissy thumbs to the wave.
To the wave.
So that does it for our review here of Megaforce. First of all, I want to thank all of you for doing this with me. This was a lot of fun, and
enjoyed it.
Yeah, Declan, if you would do me the honor of rolling that D20, we'll figure out what the next movie is going to be for this podcast.
I was practicing this earlier. I'm going to get a high number.
So basically, what we have is I have a list of 20 really bad movies, and every week we're going to be. Rolling a d20 to determine what the next movie is. What was their number?
A five.
Ooh, okay. So the next movie is going to be a movie called Runaway. I don't know if any of you have seen this. It stars Tom Selleck.
Oh, I already hate it.
Kirstie Alley, before she was Kirstie Alley.
Wait, so before she was fat? Or?
Well, yeah, but she had a different name. And the bad guy? Anyone care to venture a guess at who plays the bad guy in this movie?
James Woods.
No.
Damn it.
Ree?
Kevin Bacon.
Tim Allen.
No, Mike.
I don't know.
Gene. I don't. Motherfucking Simmons. Wow. Is the bad
Gene
guy in
Runaway. Simmons?
Yep.
I'm already excited.
Runaway.
So, what? Okay, I take it back. I'm super excited.
So really quick before we end up, this was released one day after my birthday in 1982. Yeah, so June 25th, 1982. Care to, and Mike's already heard these numbers, so you're disqualified from this round, Mike. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Declan and Reek, either of you care to venture a guess at the budget for this film?
Ladies first.
I'm going to say $3.5 million.
$3.5 million.
I don't know what money was like in the 80s.
I don't either.
So I ventured to guess last night, and I said $10,000 because I was being, what's the word, facetious.
Would it surprise either of you to find out that the budget for this movie was $20 million?
Jesus Christ.
Part two question. Yeah. Can you venture a guess as to how much it made at the box office?
I'm going to say $1 million.
I'm going to go with her $3.5
million. It made $5.6 million.
I was closest to
one,
that going over.
One quarter of what the budget was.
So none of the actors got paid.
It was a complete flop.
I wonder how much their merchandise sales was on the toys, though.
Yeah, I don't have those numbers up. Maybe we can do a corrections on our next episode.
Probably pretty shitty until the 2000s.
Right?
When it became.
I mean, it looked like the toys were pretty legit, man. I looked it up. They looked pretty cool. Maybe some like random collector still has some to this day.
Man, someone.
So that does it for the original movie, really shitty movie podcast episode. We've reviewed Megaforce here. Once again, I'd like to thank Mike, Reed, Declan, and of course myself, because I'm awesome. We'll be back in about a week with a review of Runaway, and we'll see how hard it is to get through that one. Thanks everybody, and have a good night. Thanks everybody here as well.
Good night.